Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Game to a Portland-Denver. Wasn't all that much to watch. Like, Portland did not play its best game in game one, and yet they still felt like they had a chance, and they let that game get away. So, they come out in game two, and Damian Lillard goes 1-for-7 from deep. Dame had 14 points on 17 shots. That's got to be a loss for Portland, right? There's no way you win on the road without your leader and superstar having a superstar-type night, right? Wrong. Portland is different. As great as Dame has been, they're not a one-man team. This team is brass. He's got help. He trusts that help. And even on a night when his shots aren't falling, the defense still has to respect him, which is going to open things up for guys around him. And Dame is going to find them, and he did. Guys like CJ McCollum, 20 points, 6 assists, and absurd shots like this one.
Dame has it. Gives it out to CJ. Head fake and a drive. Floats it up from the elbow and it rims around and in.
That's a big-time shot. A leaping leaner, if you will, from 15 by CJ.
That was a big-time shot. Speaking of big-time shots, Rodney Hood, 15 points off the bench, including this dagger with the shot clock winding down.
Dame dribbles, 5 to shoot. Drives, close, whoa, throws it in the corner. Three-pointer from Hood, buries it from the corner. Huge assist from Dame, bigger three from Hood.
Credit Blazers Radio, big-time shot. And then you end up with 6 guys overall in double figures, a 97-90 win on the road when their star was having an off night. That is so big. Almost any other team watches their star struggle with his shot, and then they do just that. They watch, and they struggle also, and they lose. Then they go down 2 games to none. Not the Blazers. These guys are different. They've got serious grit. Again, that's not a game that they're supposed to win. That's not a game Portland is supposed to win. Then again, they weren't supposed to win in the first round. Nobody outside their locker room thought they were going to do anything in these playoffs without Nurk. Nobody thought they would, and everybody was wrong. They do what they're supposed to do, and now they're ripping the home court, and they're going back with that all-important split. It's strong, but it does not mean the series is over, because it's not. You know Denver's not going anywhere. They're not going away. 2 games into the second round of the NBA playoffs, and there's a theme emerging. Like, this might not be the best NBA playoffs in a long time, but it's definitely the bloodiest. Steph Curry's saw finger, James Harden's bleeding eyes, all that was bad. But Denver's Torrey Craig is about to blow right by both of them. Let's go to early in the second quarter. Portland is at the free throw line. The shot's missed. Craig hits the deck. Doesn't look so bad initially. In fact, looks kind of innocuous initially. That kind of a collision happens all the time.
Nuggets guard Torrey Craig being helped off the floor. He was bleeding quite a bit. It looked like Collins' elbow caught Torrey Craig somewhere in the face. And then as Craig was falling to the floor, his head then hit the back of the foot of Monte Morris. And I couldn't tell if it then hit the floor after that. Either way, there was a lot of blood coming from the eye of Torrey Craig.
Again, it didn't look that bad initially. But then my man's face first on the floor and he's not moving. So that's no run-of-the-mill collision. And when you see it on replay and you get a different angle or two, it does look much worse.
Well, we watched Torrey Craig. He did get to his feet. He walked off under his own power there with athletic trainer Dan Chiminski, but a ton of blood coming out of his nose. And this was the contact. Watch Collins go up. The elbow comes across. And then, as he's falling down, hit his own teammate, Monte Morris. That did not look good.
No, that did not look good. So he takes a Zach Collins forearm to the face, and then on the way down, he appeared to bounce his face off the leg of his teammate, Monte Morris. So he's down for a little bit, then he gets up. But when he got up, I thought dude was hemorrhaging from his nose. I literally was concerned that he might bleed out right there on the floor and that they might try to apply a tourniquet to his face. You lose that much blood, you're looking at a transfusion. You get your beak hammered that badly, you're looking to get a reconstruction. And you can count on breathing through your mouth for a little while. And maybe, if you're really tough, you make it back in time for game 3. Or, if you're Torrey Craig, you strap on a mask, you jam a little cotton in what's left of your beak, and you show up for the second half.
Look who's coming back on the floor. And a big ovation for Torrey Craig.
Good job, young man. Get in there and fight for your team. That's what the playoffs are all about, man. I admire that. Broke his nose, but he's willing to go in there and fight for his team, and that's what playoff basketball is all about, man. Proud of that young man.
I'm proud of that young man, too. That's what I'm saying. Not dead, can't quit. Busted face, who cares? Hammered beak, whatever. Not only did this guy show up, not only did this guy re-enter the game, he was eating glass, draining threes.
Nuggets winning game one Monday night, but a much more physical game two. Look at Torrey Craig. Man, take a foul. Coming back after that kind of injury. Got a rebound. Now he hits a three.
Yeah, they throw it back out to him. He just sets his feet, plants, and knocks it down. Face mask or not, broken nose or not. Young man made a big shot.
Macho, this is a huge Trailblazer house. But I got to respect that. And that's what I mean when I say this series is not over and Denver's not going away. Nuggets head coach Mike Malone was all about Craig and the way he kept battling even with that busted beak.
They were the aggressor in the first half. They were much more physical in the first half, but extremely proud of our guys in that second half. We fought. And I think Torrey Craig is the unsung hero of the game. You know, that guy's got some balls. He's got toughness. Yeah, I'll go to war with that kid any day. He leaves it all on the floor every night.
Man, that's so great. I love hearing a coach talk about a guy like that. Quote, that guy's got some balls. I'd go to war with that kid every single night. This guy does have a serious set, and it is contagious. If you have a guy out there with a crack face, and he's hitting the boards the way he was, and he's knocking in threes, hell yes, you're going to dig deeper. And this is why you better not say that that series is over. Big, big win for Portland. And they are going home with the split. And when they get there, their crowd will be hyped. That barn will be jacked. But Denver has Craig, and neither he nor the Nuggets are taking a single step back. So not only is that series not over, it's just getting started. My guest is Tim Layden. Tim, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, good, Jim.
Good. Now, Tim, normally this is the time where you and I would talk about the scene around the track, the vibe and the build-up to the Derby, but late yesterday came news that the favorite, Omaha Beach, was being scratched due to entrapped epiglottis. What was your reaction when you heard that news? And for those who don't know, what kind of an illness is that?
It's basically the second part first. It's just basically it's a little piece of tissue in the horse's throat that kind of flops up and down when to prevent the horse from inhaling food or liquid into its lungs. So it's just sort of a protective thing. It's not a serious injury, but it's something that has to be repaired surgically, and he'll be okay in a couple of weeks, but not to run the Kentucky Derby. And how I felt about it, Jim, it's like everybody else here. I mean, he was the favorite. His trainer, Richard Mandel, is a guy that everybody likes and who's never won the Derby. His owner, Rick Porter, same thing. So, I mean, I think the air kind of went out of the race for a little while, and it's going to take another day or two to get it back, I think. That was the horse that everybody in the barns was talking about that was just a little better than everybody else and everybody was watching, and now he's gone. So whether you're a handicapper or a writer or just a fan, you're kind of scrambling to figure out what we got now.
Tim Layden joining us. You know, Tim, go back to Richard Mandel for a minute because you know this as well as anybody. The thing about horse racing is even if you have the favorite, there are a million things that can go wrong before the horses actually get into the gate. And Mandel is such a great trainer and such a class act. Everybody likes him. How badly does he want that Derby win, and how big of a gut punch is it?
You know, I saw him at Santa Anita about 10 days ago, Jim, and he tried to say the right things, which is, you know, I want a Derby, but I don't need one, which is accurate. You know, he doesn't need one for his resume. But, you know, it really is like a great baseball player who's never been to the World Series, an NBA player who's never been to the finals or won. You know, he said today at a little press gathering, and he just said, no matter how you look at this, if you're involved in racing or if you have even a passing interest in it, the thing everybody knows about is the Kentucky Derby. And it's just going to be a hole in his record, and he knows it, and we all know it, and he took it like a man, and he's going home, and he'll be flying Saturday rather than watching the race. But there's no other way to put it. I mean, the Derby is the one thing that everybody knows about, and it's the one thing, and Mandela never pushed his horses to get there, and he never injured a horse for the sake of getting him to the Derby. But, you know, this horse, Omaha Beach, was one of those kind of horses that was everybody talked about.
Clones, if we had to sum up this talk show in a single word, it would come down to this: performance. And your life is probably the same way. You might have an important meeting, maybe a business trip. Maybe you're just fighting the afternoon crash. Sometimes you need that boost, but you want an alternative to coffee or sugary energy drinks. I've got that alternative. I've got that boost. I've got something to help take your game to the next level. It is called Dawn to Dusk. It's by Brickhouse Nutrition. Dawn to Dusk was designed to be a healthier, more effective alternative to typical energy supplements. With as little caffeine as a single cup of coffee, Dawn to Dusk provides up to 10 hours of clean energy. It heightens your focus. It improves your mood. And unlike coffee or energy drinks, there are no jitters or crash, just clean energy and focus with no calories and no sugar. Go to BrickHouseRome.com. Get 15% off your first order with the offer code ROME. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. So you've got nothing to lose here. Everything to gain. Go to BrickHouseRome.com. That's BrickHouseRome.com. We're talking to Tim Layden. You're right, Tim, and especially about Mandela, because he's known as somebody who does not keep a huge stable, and he does not push his horses like that. He always does well and right by the horse, so I know that's tough for him. What about Mike Smith? He was going to ride Omaha Beach. Where does that leave Mike?
Mike made a decision that he had a chance to ride a horse named Roadster for Bob Baffert, and he also rode Omaha Beach for Mandela. When it came, push came to shove, Mike picked Omaha Beach. He thought it was a better horse, but also fit Mike's style a little better. The kind of horse that's quick on his feet, and Mike likes to get out of there, get out of trouble, and then control the race. So, yeah, Mike is heartbroken. I texted with him last night, and he just, you know, just had a sad face emoji, and you know, just hugely disappointed, and knows that a decision he made went south for him. But he feels bad for all the people around the horses. There's still talk around the backstretch that somebody's going to try and cut a check and get Mike on their horse because he's available and he's the best rider in the world. And, you know, Kieran McLaughlin said today, he's another trainer in the race. And he just said, Mike Smith is free. And, you know, the Derby horse winner is going to be worth $15 million the next morning. And you got to think about it. But Baffert is the guy that might've gone to Mike and he decided not to. He's sticking with Florent Giroux, who's his rider on Roadster, which is a classy thing for Baffert to do. And now it's a question of whether somebody else pulls the trigger and gives Mike a ride.
He is Big Race Mike, Tim Layden, joining us. Speaking of Baffert, Tim, he had said that without Omaha Beach, it's the most wide-open Derby that he has ever seen. Does that sound about right to you?
It is wide open, but, Jim, the other thing that's happening there is Bob really liked coming in here without the pressure on him. You know, he had American Pharoah, then he had Justify, and everybody was looking at him. Everybody was looking at him to talk. Everybody was looking at his horses to see what they would do, and he liked being here without that pressure. As soon as Omaha Beach went out, that pressure did shift to Baffert. He's got three good horses, Game Winner, Improbable, and Roadster. None of them are Justify or Pharoah, but they're all really good, and they all run really well every time. So it is wide open, but you know, I think that you could get a good prop bet that Baffert's three will all be in, like, the top eight. So it's hard to look past him. And after that, it is really wide open and really is going to come down to the possible sloppy track and the strategy that jockeys take in the race. It's a race where people can bet and make a lot of money.
Tim Layden joining us. All right, Tim, so when you look at the weather and the expectation that the track is going to be sloppy and the way the field is shaping up right now, who do you like on Saturday?
I mean, I kind of like a horse named Tacitus. You know, it's T-A-C-I-T-C-U-S, and he's trained by Bill Mott, who kind of takes the Mandela role now. He's a longtime Hall of Fame trainer, super respected, has never won the Derby, and he's run a lot of races at Churchill Downs, and he's 0-for-8 in the Derby. So I think he becomes a horse that could really impact it. But Baffert has Game Winner and Roadster, and I think both of them are going to run really good races. So I would certainly think of all three of those horses. And boy, after that, you know, Jim, it's just, you could make a case for half the horses to be right there at the top of the stretch, and then it comes down to who gets banged around coming out of the starting gate, who gets six wide on the first turn, and it really comes down to what happens in the race. But I'm going to look hard at Tacitus with Bill Mott and two of the three Baffert horses, and you know, Baffert doesn't want to hear that, but that's where he is now.
Tim Layden joining us. We're talking about the Kentucky Derby on Saturday. Tim, obviously this has not been the best year for the sport of horse racing. Safety has been in the news quite a bit. What do you make of what has happened and how the sport has responded?
Well, what's happened is awful. I mean, 23 horses died at Santa Anita this winter. There's been a lot of discussions as to what caused that. I think people inside the sport would say it was because of a lot of rain and a track that wasn't in great shape and horses that ran over it too much and got hurt, and just a perfect storm, no pun intended, of events that made it a really dark winter. But the result of that is that people outside racing are taking a harder look at the sport. And I think, Jim, you know, you've been in the game. You know that it's always an axiom that people in the sport say, when you race, horses die. And now I think people outside the sport are saying, well, why does it have to be that way? You know, just like with the NFL, we always said it's okay if guys get their bell rung, and then it's not okay anymore. And I think that's kind of where we're getting with racing. The sport is really slow to make changes, and they need to get a commissioner, which they're not going to get anytime soon, but they really need to take a hard look at the way people outside their sport view their sport, because sort of the tide is turning a little there, and their sport is in danger.
I think that's fair, and I think that's well said. Tim Lade, my guest. Tim, before you go, last month you were involved in the selection process for Tillman Scholars, which is a project started by the Pat Tillman Foundation. You profiled him for SI 22 years ago. What do you remember about that time that you spent with Pat Tillman?
When I met with the selection committee in Chicago that were picking a group of the Tillman Scholars, which is an amazing organization that you wouldn't believe the candidates, the things they've done in the military and in education and in their life. It's just an incredible group that Pat would be incredibly thrilled to be involved with. But when I think of Pat Tillman, what I said to the people that day was, I met him when he was a college senior, and he impressed me so much with his honesty and his toughness and his forthrightness and his maturity that I said, if he never became Pat Tillman, if he never played in the NFL, if he never went to war for his country and was killed in action, he would still have made an impression on me that I would remember him to this day. Just probably one of the five most memorable characters I've ever encountered in my career. And, you know, I got a picture of him in my office and a card that he sent me framed on my desk. And just a guy that I will never forget. And it's just great that people close to him are carrying on his name and his legacy.
Tim, I mean, that is such high praise, and I really do understand that. I had the same reaction when I first met Pat. Really quickly, it's really hard to distill it into a few sentences, but what was it about Pat that made him so special and unique?
To me, it was his honesty. When I met with him, he had won Pac-10 back then, Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year and Academic All-America, and I tried to get him to talk about those things, and his response to me was, dude, I'm really happy to be an All-American, because I'm not an academic All-American, because I'm not smart. I'm really happy for everything that's happened to me in football, but if I start talking about this stuff a lot, next thing you know, I'm old news, so I'm just looking straight ahead. And to me, that was who Pat is.
So let's talk some hockey. A round and a half into the Stanley Cup postseason, the playoffs, and as I mentioned, there's only one team that's ripping its way through that bracket. It's Rod Brind'Amour's Carolina Hurricanes. They're on fire right now. Rod the Bod's men are kicking ass. They're taking names. And if you're looking for the moment that this team turned into a monster, it's really not that hard to find. Game 3, round 1, 9:01 left in the first period. That's when Alexander Ovechkin's right hand caved in Andre Svechnikov's face.
Get the trainer out there. Hurry up. Get out there.
The punch was supposed to light the wick on another cup run for the Caps. What it did instead was put the freaking paddles to the Canes' chest. You want to talk about taking a freaking punch. The Canes literally took one of the most violent right hands ever delivered in the playoffs, and now suddenly they're unstoppable. They're on a 5-game winning streak. They're doing it against, or they're doing it at, the toughest time of the year against the toughest teams in the league. They ripped the belt off the champs in a Game 7 double OT win. They walked into the Islanders building. They ripped two more tight games. Then last night, back home, for the first time in 9 days, Jerk Nation showed up loud and proud. And believe me, nobody has ever embraced being called a bunch of jerks like these dudes have.
They're still not drawn. They're a bunch of jerks as far as I'm concerned.
It's Don Cherry. They love it. I mean, the more you say that, the more hype they are. They love that handle. They're nothing but a bunch of jerks. That all started with all their post-game celebrations. But then they go out and they stuff the Islanders in a locker. You want to talk about a perfect recipe for a playoff win? Check this out. Fast start? Check.
Haynes eases it around where Jordan Stahl picks it up. He backpedals to the blue line. Lays it off for Hamilton. Shot that goes far. Haynes to the side of the net. They score! Early on, Teuvo Teravainen deflects in the Jacob Slavin attempt as he was all alone to the left of Leonard. And the Canes jump out 1-0.
As long as we're checking boxes, demoralizing felony theft between the pipes, why not?
Here come the Islanders. It's Everly in front for Lenny alone. And it's out. Held out. McElhaney right along the goal line. What a stop.
Look at it. It's right underneath the skate. And then when he moves his skate away, there was some daylight for Everly.
Yeah.
And that's when Everly had a chance. The Islander bench jumped up thinking it goes in right there. There's a daylight. And he whacks at it. And the glove was right there to scoop it up for McElhaney. But a great chance there by the Islanders off of the shot block.
And a better save. And how about a freaking ridiculous penalty box to dump pass, to one-handed catch, to a breakaway snipe? I think I'll have one of those.
Now Jordan Stahl goes out to challenge Letty. Shot right on as Letty laid it off for Ryan Pulock. And McElhaney makes a big save. And now the penalty is killed. And out of the box is Justin Falk. Catches it in on a breakback and he scores! Justin Falk with a beauty out of the box and into the net. And the Hurricanes take a 2-1 lead.
And then finally, a game-sealing dagger from Mr. Game 7 himself.
And the captain, Justin Williams, eases the puck up to Nino Niederreiter. Niederreiter fires it in. Leonard momentarily has a problem handling that puck. Sebastian Aho with the turnover on for the score! They score! The Carolina Hurricanes captain, Justin Williams, pops it free! What a play by Aho behind the net! And the captain puts the Canes out in front! 3-2!
Kick in a couple of empty netters, and Jerk Nation was feeling it. Then Rod the Bod walked into the room afterwards and delivered a perfect locker room message. You want to talk about a freaking boss. Rod walks in, starts his speech with, "I'll be brief, men." And then 30 seconds later, that place is electric. The buttons this guy's pushing right now are incredible. He's turning the Islanders inside out after the Isle took a broom to the Penguins. I mean, that's not some chump on the other bench making line changes, right? It's Barry Trotz. And Rod's flexing on him like it's leg day. And he's pushing 600 pounds around on the squat rack. This team is playing with crazy mojo. Crazy mojo right now. Curtis McElhaney made his first playoff start ever. And he's just a couple of weeks shy of turning 36. And this guy's standing on his head. He's dominating. Justin Williams delivering game winners still at age 37. And the Canes went from wild card to one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. There is no better time to get hot in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's when you want to be playing your best. And there's no hotter team right now than the Carolina Hurricanes. And these dudes turned getting punched one punched into 100 gallons of premium jerk fuel.
Bunch of jerks.
Bunch of jerks. Man, bunch go jerks. Canes.
Go Canes.
No, go Canes. I cannot be impressed. That is not what I expected. You never know what you're going to get in the NHL postseason, but that was not what I expected.
Bunch of jerks.
Bunch of jerks. Keep saying it. They love it.
Bunch of jerks.
Bunch of jerks running away with it. Let me talk to you about my favorite new clothing, my favorite new company, Johnny O. Johnny O invented and patented the tweener button. What that is a hidden button between the second and third button, and it's featured on all Johnny O shirts. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up or too unbuttoned. It's a hidden button, and it solves the age-old second button dilemma. Should you button one or should you button two? That's no longer a dilemma. Not with the tweener button. Every Johnny O shirt comes with their patented tweener button, so you're always going to look just right. It is a total game changer. It's brilliant. And now, use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com. Do that right now through May 30th. 20% off the regular price button-ups, which come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles. And shipping is free for orders over $85. That's johnny-o.com, promo code ROME. Get 20% off the first order. Get free shipping on orders over $85. Again, johnny-o.com for your tweener shirt. 20% off. Check out the wide selection of shirts and other products. They range from polos to shorts, pants, swim, and more. johnny-o.com. My guest is Chris Haynes. Chris, good to have you back. How are you?
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. All right, so you have this really, really good piece that you did with Damian Lillard last week that I want to get to in a minute, but what does it tell you, Chris, about the Blazers as a team that they can beat Denver on the road in a game where Damian really does not dominate?
Yeah, I didn't know if that was possible, to be honest with you. You know, for the most part, Damian Lillard has carried the Blazers this postseason, just putting up incredible numbers, and he's really stepped up his play from the regular season. And so I thought that, you know, that was the key to success with this team. But definitely with them, the role players stepping up, you got Mo Harkless, Aminu, and his character's been playing phenomenal as well. You got those guys producing, if they're playing solid defense. I think they proved themselves that, you know, they're still a quality team if Damian Lillard's offense is not as on as we've been accustomed to in his playoffs. And so if that can continue, if that confidence continues to grow, that I think this is going to be a long series. And, I know you're not asking me now, but I really think all of these, four of these series are going to be, has the potential to go the distance. So I'm looking forward to what the rest of the playoffs has in store.
Chris Haynes joining us. I think this definitely is going to be a long series. Now, there have been so many different storylines in this year's playoffs, but I'm not sure there's one that's more fascinating to me than what Lillard is doing both as a player and a leader. There's this great moment in your piece where Lillard had a few people over to watch game four of the Jazz and the Rockets, and he's sitting there quietly eating, and then he says, quote, "I'm getting rid of these mother bleepers tomorrow." What did you make of that statement, Chris?
I would just sit back. I was just in awe of his confidence level. And, you know, I want to give a little background to how that story came
sure.
about real quick, if I can.
Sure.
I had to take a red eye after that game, which was Tuesday, game five, a red eye at 12:30 a.m. And so I knew I wasn't going to be able to get Dame. Dame promised me some time. So I knew I wasn't going to be get Dame after the game. So I went to his house the night before and, you know, spent some time with him. And I was just in awe with the confidence level of him. And he called game five from the get-go. So you take it a couple days back. So after game three, when OKC won and, you know, Russell Westbrook was, you know, pounding his chest, you know, talking mess, and Dennis Schroeder was mimicking the Dame time motion, Paul George did the dunk at the end, went up by 12. And so I hit Dame up that day after game three when Portland was up 2-1. And I said, hey, you know, I only can cover one of the next two games, game four or game five. I said, which one do you think I should come out to? And he told me then, he was like, look, come to game five for the closeout. He said, spend Easter with your family. Game four would have been on Easter. And so, man, this guy, like, he don't get me wrong, he felt – a little disrespectful about what Westbrook and the Thunder did throughout the series, but he kept it composed, and I tried to share that in the story and just the way he was talking. He was composed. He showed great leadership, but at the same time, he showed how much it ticked him off, and he wanted to, you know, like you said in the story, get them MFs out, and, you know, he lived up to his word.
Chris Haynes joining us. I'm glad you shared that story. So just staying on that one point, you know, part of the thinking in the OKC series was that was going to be a battle between Westbrook and Damian Lillard, and that it was about Lillard proving that he was the better player. But from your conversations with him, did Lillard see it that way? How did he approach it?
Well, he did. Look, I'm not going to say he didn't embrace the challenge. He did. Dame always feels like he's one of the top two or three point guards in the league. So whenever his counterpart is one of those guys that people mentioned, then he's going to, you know, rev it up a little bit more. But the thing with him is, you know, he told me that in the story. He's like, look, I wanted to dominate my matchup, but I wasn't going to come down and try to match Russ shot for shot. You know, that wasn't the plan. And as you've seen, like, there was at times where, you know, Dame, he'll engage in some words with Russ, and then Russ will come down and try to take him in the post, shoot some shots, and kind of, you know, and shots like that kind of got OKC out of rhythm, you know, out of tune. And so he kind of played into that. He used that tactic to get into the mindset of Russ. And look, I didn't know if I thought that he would dominate this matchup. Obviously, I felt like, you know, these are both marquee point guards. We're going to see a good battle between the two, but I didn't think he was going to obliterate Russell Westbrook the way he did and expose him the way he did. And it was a mind game, Jim. It was a mind tactic as well as the on-court performance, man. And he really let loose, you know, in the story to me, just about how he felt. You know, people don't see Dame in that light. You know, I have a relationship with him to where, you know, he felt relaxed and sharing, you know, how he really felt in really candid detail. So I thank you for bringing that up, because he was really – I was shocked that he was willing to go on record saying that. And so it just produced – it was great content, but it was even greater performance in Game 5, and it just matched the show. And, you know, I thank him for doing that at that time.
Really good content. Chris Haynes joining us. All right, so shift over to Golden State. After Game 2, Kevin Durant told you, Chris, quote, "This is where this bleep is fun. This is when it's serious, and I'm just embracing it. I'm just having so much fun right now. The time of year is what I'm geared for, hooping at a high level, you know, et cetera, et cetera." So for stretches of the regular season, he didn't seem like he was having that much fun. Is it just a matter of the stakes being higher, or did something else change for him?
Well, I think it's a couple things. Obviously, you know, he told me in a piece, he's like, look, during the regular season, you guys want to come and ask us about, you know, what's wrong with us. If we lose to the Phoenix Suns or some team we should beat, you guys want to ask what's wrong with us. You know, are we still the same Golden State Warriors team? And he said, look, 82-game regular season, we don't prepare in the manner that we prepare in the postseason. He said they don't do a ton of film study on other teams because you don't have a lot of time and days to prepare. And during the regular season, it's all about yourself. It's all about, you know, trying to grow and facilitate the offense. And that's what in the playoffs, the preparation shifts to game plan for the team, individual assignments, to where you can just gear and set for that. And he's like, now I think Kyrie Irving said it, you know, like last month, something like that, was like, I can't wait till the playoff starts. Like, that's where I really make my money. And so Kevin Durant, you know, he's basically echoing those sentiments and saying that, you know, this is when the games matter. This is when my team needs me. Like, I can coast a little bit during the regular season, but now I'm having so much fun. The offense is going through him now, which is a change, you know, since he's arrived, you know, in Golden State. That was hardly the case until the finals. I can't remember the team relying so heavily on him before they got to the finals. And so this is all new, and it's fun for him. He's dominating on the display. You know, people are talking about he's the best player in the game now. He loves all that. He loves what's happening. And he said it's due to it just being the postseason right now, and that is winning time.
Not only that, but it does go back to him reminding everybody that he was him in that Clippers series, and looks like a different guy since then. Now, Chris, after Game 1, the Rockets were really angry about the officiating. After Game 2, they lost again. Now they're down 0-2. So how much of that, in your mind, is about the officiating, and how much of that is about Golden State just being better?
Well, look, I think, obviously, I don't want to just dismiss the Houston Rockets' claims. So they do felt like they were on the wrong end of some calls or no calls dating back to last postseason. But look, I will say this, man, the officiating is not going to win or lose the series. And, you know, after the first game, you know, for 24 hours, that was the talk on officials. And I don't know if that was too much talk for the Rockets, where they paid too much attention to who was going to be the officials on assignment for game two. I don't know. But when you're playing against the Warriors, Jim, you got to focus on them. You know, it's hard enough focusing on their starting five, and then you're trying to focus on eight, including three of the officials. So, you know, I just think, you know, it's better for everybody just to, you know, to focus on the game, talk about the game, try to make adjustments that way. Because if you're concerning yourself with eight people rather than five, I think you're doing yourself a disservice even before the ball tips. So, but well, all that said, I think Houston, they have a great home court advantage. They play well at home. I think they can still turn this series, and you know, this series still have the potential to go the distance as well. I don't think we should overreact over two games, but I just think if the focus is going to be on, you know, the officiating, who's officiating, what their record of calls are when they officiate one of our games, if that's the concern, and if that's being made public, and if the players are talking about this, that shows that, you know, they're worried about three other competitors other than the five they should be worried about. So, but I think they can get it done, but they have to stop all the official talk.
Chris Haynes, my guest. Chris, one thing before you go. You had DeMarcus Cousins on your podcast about a month back. When you spoke with him, what was your sense as to how he was feeling about where he is at this point of his career?
He was at a great place in life, Jim, and that's what's really sad. You know, I had him on, I want to say, maybe a week and a half before he went down with his injury, and he was in a happy place right now, man. He was putting up, you know, real solid numbers. I think he was like around 16-9, you know, starting to get his feel. You know, he was on a vegan diet, saying, you know, he told me, you know, on the podcast, he was trying to shed weight before the postseason started. And so he was, you know, and when you think about DeMarcus Cousins, you know, you don't, it's rarely you hear about him, you know, and dietary methods of, you know, trying to keep his body fresh and in shape. And, you know, he was talking about that. And to see him go down like that, man, I feel for him. You know, I don't have a rooting interest for any team, but you definitely feel for people when they're trying to put their all into the game and do what's best for the team. And, you know, he's going to be a free agent this summer. You know, the plan all along was to try to capitalize on the time that he was here at Golden State and try to get out there and get as much money as he can. And hopefully he still can, Jim. But that was a tough blow, man. And I definitely feel for him because it felt like, and I urge people to listen to that too. You know, it sounds like a much more mature DeMarcus Cousins. And it was just a sad case.
Bad blow to be sure. He's a senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports, host of the Post It Up with Chris Haynes podcast. Again, the Pride of Fresno, friend of the program, my guest, Chris Haynes. Chris, I appreciate it, man. Good to run you down. Thank you very much.
Hey, Jim. Hey, before I get off, man, I would love to have you on the podcast, man. So I want to just put that out there for everybody.
I'll do that. Least I could do. In his 25th season, you know him, you love him, from the University of Maryland, Alvin's Week It Was. Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. It is great to have you here. Hope you had a good weekend. I hope your Monday's off to a good start. Nice to have you. Amazing weekend. Endgame. Game of Thrones. Game one of the Rockets Warriors. It was all happening. Hell, the biggest stars of the entire weekend were none other than Kirkland, Zarba, and Tiven. Yeah! Can't let the referees leave the show on the Monday after a weekend like that.
To the basket.
I'm Kevin Durant.
And they needed every bit of that.
You know who I am.
Andrew Bogut. Andrew, so good to have you back.
You got to come out to the game in Houston.
If I can get on that Andrew Bogut jet, I might come out. You know,
we'll
a beer or two after.
With Toby.
Toby. Can you get Toby to come?
Well, that's your guy. Give him a call and you can sit courtside and have a few beers. Kick a few back and enjoy the game.
Larry Brown.
Email.
An email reads, who's the new guy? Bruce Willis?
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Damn, I wish. Ben Golliver is my guest.
Hey, I'm sure you want to talk about NBA officiating, but I understand you've got Joey Crawford now on your new crew. Is he your new crew member?
But it is good to have some new shiny, happy people on staff, isn't it?
Because you didn't just make a line, you crossed a freaking line. And the only way the Browns do not make the playoffs is if there aren't playoffs this year.
What's up with that?
That ridiculously small and ill-fitting uniform in Seattle. Just get this guy a mustard jacket in the right size because he deserves it. Damn it.
Wait a minute. He's bringing Janikowski out.
Right side lays up. It is. Joel Embiid scores the ball.
And that's some man's game stuff right there.
Man's game.
Battling the Big E.
Equalizer.
MJ had his flu game. Joel had his poo game.
If you had
diarrhea
before, you would know how I feel.
Chase Elliott is my guest. Chase, great to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, man. You're way too nice. Way too nice. You made that sound okay.
Whoa, Sarah Jessica Parker winning the Derby!
It doesn't make any sense!
Hey, Alvin, did you want him to say that?
It's happening, you guys! It's happening!
The second you heard the name Sarah Jessica Parker, you should have been on that guy.
Jimmy, don't ever leave a snake man alone with little Alvy. He'll definitely eat him.
These motherfuckers! Snakes.
You know, I've said it before, you know, it wouldn't break my heart if the Lakers suck forever.
Let's go to Kansas City, JJ.
JJ, Rome, thanks for the vine, man.
JJ!
Wart, whiskey, being an alpha dog, and Rome.
You're not that good!
He dislocated the finger. And did that hurt?
What you think?
I'm no doctor, but I don't think I need to be a doctor to know that your finger is not supposed to have a right angle like that.
Man's game.
How about James Harden's eyes? If Steph Curry looked like he saw something from the Saw franchise, Harden was the Shining.
Barely can see.
His eyes opening, like the elevator doors opening, and blood rushing out.
Kyler Murray
Cliff Kingsbury is my guest.
To take it 80 on any play and be the fastest player on the field and then beat you dropping back all day long with touch and accuracy and poise from the pocket. As an organization, it was just too great of a skill set to pass up.
Is it take your grandfather to work day? I don't know who's going to drop dead first. Me from the cholesterol or the new guy from the sudden dopamine rush of his first Twitter notification.
Ryan Palmer.
I'm sitting on my John Deere mowing our pasture area at this moment. We got some grass that needed to be mowed, and when you get mama telling you to mow, you go mow.
Rome, I'm putting the whole smack off field on notice. I'm cutting through everyone in the field who gets in my way, foreign and domestic.
My guest is Mike Rupp.
There's a young player. I'm trying not to
freak
to spoil
out
my drawers there. And so watching these guys makes you feel like it's just another game.
The new guy is not Mr. Clean.
Mr. Clean.
Sorry to disappoint. He is none of those people. Officially and formally, I introduce to you the new guy, Garrett Ritt. It's Ritt. It's Garrett Ritt. He's Ritt. It's Ritt. I can't hear you. It's Ritt. I'm off tomorrow. Today is my Friday. If I'm wearing my denim and I backed it in and Big Head Flight Deck is in the building and I heard a deck of yeah, then it must be Friday. Tim Layden joining us.
I kind of like a horse named Tacitus. Two of the three Baffert horses. And, you know, Baffert doesn't want to hear that, but that's where he is now.
Tim Layden Jansen's got to make a choice. Does he care about his health? Does he care about that heart medication? Because it's taking 5 miles an hour off his fastball and he's killing us.
Bro. You're not going to really come at a guy for taking heart medication, are you?
They're a bunch of jerks.
I'd bake for him, too.
Man, I would love to have you on the podcast. I want to just put that out there for everybody.
I'll do that. Brian Goodwin is my guest, and he is in studio.
He'd do everything he could to push me to want to throw up.
He's so cow, man. Y'all out here with no shirts.
Nah,
we all love the Red Sox.
Love in the box for being Greg Louganis.
Don't tase me, bro.
He's fine. You know.
Fan smack.
Anytime, Jim. Thanks, buddy.
In market, on topic.
He told me to ask you about Kobe from Houston.
Nice.
Just stupid idiot.
Sierra miss.
Javier's doing something right over there.
Robert Dasmati calling it a day. He's walking off on it.
Peace.
Good night now!
Brian Goodwin is my guest, and he is in studio. Brian, my man, good to see you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, man. Thanks for having me, Jim.
It's really good to have you. Listen, you've got a great backstory, which we'll get into, but how about that SoCal lifestyle? How you like living out here and working out here?
It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. It's not much not to like, really. The weather's great. The atmosphere is wonderful. Y'all been showing me a little hospitality, man. You got beaches everywhere and shopping everywhere. You can't beat it.
Man, you know what's up. You know what's up. My man knows what's up. And it also helps when the team is playing well. So you beat Toronto last night. You've now won 5 of your last 6. Team got kind of off to a slow start, but you're playing really well right now. You've got a chance to finish that sweep this evening. What's the vibe like around the club? And the fact that you guys keep finding ways to win.
That's just it. Everybody is just, we know we can win. We know we will win. And everybody's just super confident. I guess, I don't know. I'm just getting here, so I'm brand new. But the vibe is like, we go into every game thinking we're going to win. And everybody goes out and they play their tails off. And everybody's got each other's back. When you have people doing that and going all out for each other, I mean, it's just a good situation.
Hey, listen, the thing about chemistry, right? People like to talk about, man, that's so overrated. It doesn't mean anything. It seems to me the guys who think the chemistry doesn't matter play on teams where there is no chemistry, right? I mean, guys picking each other up is a real thing.
It's huge. It's huge.
Now, yeah, as part of finding ways to win, though, Brian Goodwin in studio, you came up in the bottom of the 8th with a score tied at 3 on Tuesday night. What was your approach going into that at bat?
Against a guy like that, they hadn't. You just have to know how they're going to attack you. I think you gotta have a plan before you even go to the plate. So, and I got a good idea what they were trying to do to me the whole game. So by the time I got to my last AB, I kind of knew what to look for and what I was looking for and what they were gonna do with the guy that they had on the mound, and they just so happened to do it right by the book and
right.
Caught him.
So, you know, I was going to say, when you know it's coming, you can catch one, and you got a hold of it. You went to deep right center for the go-ahead run, 4-3 for the win. What was that moment like for you?
It's big, man. It's big. Because, like you said, we've been riding some games, and we've been one hit away or a run away from winning some of these games that we're always in. And, you know, just get that big hit and take the lead and going into the ninth. Knowing our bullpen is solid and they come in and we got
We got the White Horse coming in and closing it down. And, yeah, so once we go up by one that late in the game, you know, you kind of feels good knowing you might have that one in the bag.
Brian Goodwin joining me in studio. We're talking Angel baseball, which I'm always happy to do. Now, you go back to last year when you were traded from Washington to Kansas City in July. Listen, you know it's business. You understand this. But what's it like when you find out you've been traded by the organization that drafted you and brought you up?
It was kind of bittersweet. I say it was bitter, obviously, because of, you know, the backstory. I got drafted by those guys. That was the first people that actually gave me a chance. I feel like they drafted me from a baby. I remember, if you saw the pictures, I don't know, I posted on Instagram, but if you saw the pictures, man, I was baby faced and freshly shaved, and you know, I was just beginning to start. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but also I wasn't in the greatest situation, and we had a lot of talent, very talented team. And it wasn't much opportunity for playing time. So, I saw that with Kansas City. So that would be the sweet side of it, that I was looking at an opportunity to get some more playing time.
That's the biggest thing, right? So you go to Kansas City and you get off to a good start in your first five games, you go 8-17, you're dialed in, you're seeing the ball well, but then you suffer a groin injury and you got to go on the injured list. How frustrating was that time?
Super frustrating.
Right?
Super frustrating. Yeah. You know, it was kind of punch in the gut. Like you said, you get off to a good start. That's what you want to do when you get to a new team. And, you know, you see an opportunity for more playing time like I was getting at the time, and playing against righties, lefties, everybody, and doing pretty well. So to kind of put that momentum I had going on hold, you know, it kind of hurt a little bit.
Brian Goodwin joining me in studio. So what you do then in the offseason, it seems like you took your conditioning in the offseason to a new level. Is that true? And if so, what was the thinking? Why was that?
Oh, that's super true. And that's a lot of thanks goes to the Kansas City staff that they have, the medical staff they have over there. But a lot of the issues we were looking at were consistently happening over and over. So we had to find, you know, what it was that was going on and what we needed to change. And I think we addressed it. And, you know, once we finally put a name to it and saw exactly what it was, I just had to, you know, put in time to clean it up and make everything right.
All right. So you're doing the work in Raleigh and you come back to the point where you have single digit body fat. So what kind of workouts were you doing? And then how does it feel to see those results?
Man, they had me doing all kinds of stuff.
Like what?
The workouts were intense, man. We were just running. We were running two a day. So I was in the gym about 8 o'clock in the morning, and we would work out. My man Will Parker, he would work me out for about an hour and a half, and he'd do everything he could to push me to want to throw up by the time I left there. But after that, we would get some good work in, and then I would drive up to Durham. And I had my guy Mark Mueller up at Duke, and he was my speed guy. So I would leave straight from the weightlifting, and I go to Duke, and I hit the track for about an hour, hour and a half every day, and we just ran it for the whole offseason.
So I mean, you're putting all this time in. I'm wondering, was there like a moment, was there some kind of like soul searching that went on? For instance, I mean, you're a former first round pick, but you're getting kind of dinged up, and the injuries are accumulating. Did it kind of hit you one day where like, something's got to change, and if it's going to change, I have to change it myself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think when it really hit me was in Kansas City. The first time I got there, and you know, they're looking you over and looking you up and down, and the strength coach is saying, you got to come in for your weight and your body fat and stuff like that. And the whole time I'm just dreading it. Like, this is the last thing I want to do, you know. My clothes don't fit that good, and my shirts are kind of stretched out, so
hey, man, we've all been there, right? Like, you're just not feeling good about you, right?
Yeah, it was.
Welcome to my life, my man. Welcome to my life every day, bro. Every day.
Come on, you so cow, man. Y'all out here with no shirts on, living in the sunlight.
Hell no, not me, man. I'm not taking mine off till I get some work in. But you get through that, right? And you know that you got to put the time in, you got to get the work in. At any point, did you ever lose any kind of identity as to who you were as a ball player?
I think so. I think kind of in D.C. kind of towards the end, like I said, it kind of got to the point where, you know, it's like what am I doing here? What am I supposed to be doing? What do I need to do? Because I know that I've been playing up to this long, and this isn't me. So something's got to change.
Right. So you knew you could play. You come here, and so and things are going great right now. When you get to the Angels, how did you approach that? Did you want to prove the Royals wrong, or did you want to prove the Angels right?
I might have had a little chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
From the Royals, but I wouldn't say I put enough energy into the Royals to be able to say that it was about them. I think it was more so the second part of the question, that it was more to prove the Angels right.
Brian Goodwin joining me in studio. Now, after tonight's game, you've got tomorrow off, and then you're playing the Astros in Monterrey, Mexico on Saturday and Sunday. Are you looking forward to the experience, and how do you approach a road trip like that?
Oh, absolutely. I've been to Mexico one other time. I played winter ball in Mexico. I had a wonderful time. Great, great people over there. Great fan base. It's lovely over there also, especially. It'll be real nice this time of year. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it, man. Getting over there and getting into the lifestyle and living it up for a couple of days.
Yeah, that'll be a fun time. I got to ask you about Mike Trout. Like, Mike Trout, obviously you get asked about him a lot because he's just such a different dude. I mean, my man is so good in this community. He is so good with the kids, and you know that nobody can swing quite like this guy. What's it like to see him on a day-to-day basis, the way he approaches his work?
It's fun. It gives you that playing the game like a kid feel again. It just, you can feel the energy that he brings to the park every day, and he's just excited to be there. He's excited to be there, and people that are happy like that are genuinely fun to be around, and he's just a great guy to be around and spend time with, pick his brain, and obviously you can learn a thing or two from him. So he's just a great guy. I like being around him and Albert like a ton.
Like, what do you talk to Pujols about? I mean, that's a guy who's been through everything, seen everything. That's a good guy to sit down and pick his brain. What kind of conversations do you have with him?
I keep saying he's the OG, man. You can ask that dude anything, because he can tell you about life. He can tell you about baseball, the business. He's been through every bit of it. So there's really not a question that, you know, you can't ask him.
Did he tell you to go to my man Javier and see Javier in Crystal Cove? You are now a 949 guy. Say this to everybody who comes into this town to play. Have you been to Javier's?
I have.
And what do you think? Does it live up to the hype?
Javier's is doing something right over there.
See what I'm saying? The next person I send there that doesn't say that will be the first. He's hitting .321 on the year. He is top 10 in the American League in batting average and OPS, a former first-round pick of Washington, but doing it with the Angels. Brian, glad you came in studio, man. Glad to have you in my house, and I appreciate the visit. Thanks so much.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having
good
me.
Job.
Enjoyed it.
Dan in Denver. Dan, what's up? How are you?
I'm good, Rome. Thanks for the vine. Hey, Liz in Fall City. Glad to hear you wouldn't ever unwar Team Bake on an Ask the Pros question. Here's another thing you shouldn't ever do. Call the Jim Rome Show. And, Jim, I heard you're taking tomorrow off. I guess that means Brad and Corona is going to call your guest host and talk about how good-looking his wife is or how well-endowed the host is, things Brad knows nothing about. Jim, I like that Matt and Van call a little bit ago. My favorite part was when he stuttered and had to repeat that line over in the middle. Matt's call delivery is so awkward, I can't tell if he's making a phone call or imitating your hockey predictions. Also, Jim, I heard Caleb in Green Bay call yesterday and say that no one likes me. That's funny coming from a guy who takes Twitter hiatuses because no one likes him. Caleb's such a charity case, Rome. It's great. He's made himself such a big target that you can't hit him. See, Jim, if I came in here and congratulated him on winning huge caller yesterday or complimented him on how well he enunciates his lines, I'd get my ticket ripped. So I won't do that, Caleb. Instead, I'll just wish you the best and wait for you to quit the show for attention again. More than Nuggets and six. Out, Romy.
All right, Dan, nice job. He still has it. I'm not even going to play with that. He still has his golden ticket, and that's what you have to do if you've got one. Jason in Harrisburg. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, Jen. How are you?
Good. Great.
Hey, Matt, getting a golden ticket is the only way for some of us to get in, and I freaking want one. Jim, you know the guy who thinks he never played pro sports because he got screwed by his high school coach? Well, I was at my son's baseball game the other night, and I realized that as soon as that guy has kids, he becomes a little league coach. This is so he can yell at his kid and make sure he plays pitcher and shortstop every game. Because you know, Jim, that getting the pros has nothing to do with athletic ability, talent, or perseverance. It only has to do with what position you were allowed to play in Little League. The funny thing about this is, I can guarantee you that if Chastity or Destiny or whatever name Tyler in Edmonton stripper du jour is going by does ever allow him to plant his seed, he'll immediately become Little League coach guy. By the time this kid is two or three, he'll have converted one of those little tykes box slides into a toddler squat rack, broken the stick off the horse head to use as the bar, and slid those little plastic stackable rings into the bar to use as weights. He'll be down on his knees screaming in the kid's face, "Keep your shoulders back. Keep your back straight." He'll also have to put the poor kid's Pampers on extra tight so they can double as both diaper and weight belt, but those are preventing the reemergence of an umbilical hernia. So in the interest of children everywhere, let me put out a public service announcement to all current and future Little League coaches. If your kid can't throw or catch, sending him out to the mound doesn't make him a pitcher. It makes him humiliated. So please do everyone a favor and get over yourself. It was 20 years ago, man. War Little League coach guy explaining that he's overweight because all his sports-related injuries prevent him from being able to exercise. I'm out.
She called my entire staff ugly and unwarranted team bake. And I thought, man, that's kind of harsh, Liz. I mean, really? Now she's calling. Let's find out what that was about. Liz in Falls City. Are you calling to apologize, Liz?
Well, Jim, I'm calling to clear a little matter up about some asshat sending an ATP yesterday using my name. That was definitely not me, particularly at the end where they unwore team bake. I would never unwore team bake. Why would I ever unwore team bake? I love team bake. I'm all about team bake. I love bake sales. I love baking bread, baking cookies, baking brownies, baking cakes. Baking is my favorite thing to do, and I do it all day. I even have a poster of Betty freaking Crocker in my kitchen. My kids only play with Easy Bake ovens. I will bake for my friends, my family, even if that fat ass Blake Shelton showed up at my house, I'd bake for him too.
Notice Liz did not take back the part about all of you being ugly, just that she's anti-team bake. Let's go to Alhambra. Matt, good to have you. Matt, how are you?
I am great, Romy. Thank you for the vine. I'm from the fighting city of Alhambra, the kind of place where someone would actually leave your show to go work in the San Gabriel Valley. And I'm here to talk about the only thing in professional sports I truly care about, the beloved Blue, the Los Angeles Dodgers. From when I was 4 years old, my grandfather said, let me tell you about a guy named Sandy Koufax, to the 78 series when I was about eight and watched Reggie Jackson get smoked by a rookie Bob Welch and go nuts. And when I was sitting on the right field sideline and watched Gibson jacket out against the A's and ruin them. This team is a team of destiny. Cody Bellinger is looking like Babe Ruth. The pitching staff is just getting their arms stretched out. The only thing that has to happen here is Kenley Jansen's got to make a choice. Does he care about his health or does he care about that heart medication? Because it's taking 5 miles an hour off his fastball and he's killing us. But if we get that, our bullpen squared away, we are going to win the World Series. I love the Dodgers. Go Blue. Thank you for the barn, and I am out.
You got it, Matt. Thank you.
Good night now.